This is ESPN Radio.
And never forget that there are levels to this. Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and we're going to go out there a little bit later in the 4 o'clock hour to hear from my birthday brother, Kendrick Perkins, to get us up to speed on the latest going on with the NBA and the Jokic brothers and the Morris twins. But there we go. But before we do that, Gojo, we got to get to these college football playoff rankings, and I know a lot of people got a lot to say about it, so we want everybody that's listening to hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We want to hear from you because, Gojo, as I was watching Reese Davis and the crew give the reveal at Madison Square Garden, and by the way, the guys did a terrific job of building the anticipation for it, the one thing that popped into my head as I'm watching the show was that Cincinnati might actually have a viable path to being in the top four in the college football playoff. Like, it's not far-fetched to think that Alabama, with dates on the schedule against Auburn in the Iron Bowl on the road, and then potentially in the SEC championship against Georgia, then you look at Oklahoma with dates against Baylor and Oklahoma State, who happens to have one of the best defenses in the country, and then the three Big Ten teams, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Michigan, which in effect they're all going to have something to say playing each other down the stretch. Like, it just feels like there could be a viable path for Cincinnati to get into the college football playoff. And all the outrage that we heard the last couple of weeks about where they were rated starting out with the initial rankings, it might be much ado about nothing. If they continue to win, they're probably going to have a good shot at getting in.
Yeah, Chris, Cincinnati moves up to 5 this week after Michigan State, who was number 3 in the first round of rankings, gets bumped down, losing to Purdue this past weekend. And I said that on the broadcast. I was on the call for Cincinnati's game against Tulsa that came down to the wire, that was a nail-biter, that Tulsa had a chance to win on near the last play of the game. And I said, Cincinnati's strength of schedule, the remaining strength of schedule going into last week, was 81st in the country down the stretch of the season. Not great.
Mm-mm.
People would use that as a weapon against them. Chris, exactly what you just said is true. They have got the least problematic, the least chaotic path forward for the college football playoff of any team out there. And in this year, that is worth its weight in gold. So I'm with you. Do they still technically need help? Yes, but that help seems more likely than it's ever been when I can remember watching the college football playoff rankings.
No question about it. But the one thing I will say is Cincinnati looked awfully vulnerable in that game against Tulsa. They started out a house of fire, and I know you were there calling the game. But then things took a turn in that game, and they didn't close out that ball game like you would expect the team that's going to be in the Final Four competing for a national championship. So I can understand some of the reluctance to vault Cincinnati into that top four, especially at this point in the season. If there are other programs from Power Five conferences that have an opportunity to make the case, which three other teams do that are sitting behind them, then I get why the committee would want to make sure that they keep that door open. I just don't think it's all going to happen for those teams. I just don't. Like, to think that Oklahoma's just going to run the table as vulnerable as they've looked at times throughout the course of this season, to think that they're just going to handle Baylor and they're going to handle Oklahoma State, and then Alabama, who only ran the ball for, what, 6 yards against LSU this past weekend in a game where they were double-digit favorites? I don't know. And then you start looking at what's going on in the Big Ten. Yeah, I think there's a real chance that Cincinnati will have an opportunity, although I would say I don't consider them from a talent standpoint to be one of the four best teams in the country.
Nope, I would agree, Chris. And it's worth noting what you just said about the teams on the outside looking in right now. This is according to Mark Schlabaugh, who wrote an article about this on ESPN.com. In the previous 7 editions of the college football playoffs, 24 of the eventual 28 teams that have been selected were in the top 6 of the committee's ranking at this point of the season. Only Ohio State in 2014, Oklahoma and Michigan State in 2015, and Oklahoma in 2019 were outside of the top 6 with 5 weeks to go, according to data from ESPN Stats and Info. So, Chris, really, it's Oklahoma at number 8 in my mind is the only team outside of the top 6 with a viable path forward. Now, we got to get to the biggest issue from last night, because Chris's point about Cincinnati is well served, but this is the part that almost made my head explode. Because, Chris, been doing this and watching this for a while. gone through the college football playoffs, mock selection exercises down in Dallas. I've seen this process up close firsthand. And so when people say, man, this is all rigged, it's all for TV, I push back. I'm like, listen, I did that in a setting where there were no repercussions, and I saw how much it mattered to the people in the room. I refuse to believe that about the 13 people actually tasked with deciding the future of these young men in this sport. But when the committee decides to rank Michigan ahead of Michigan State in this ranking, Michigan number 6, Michigan State number 7, 2 weeks after Michigan State beat Michigan head-to-head at the site of College Game Day, while still ranking Oregon over Ohio State, who again, Oregon beat Ohio State earlier in the season, and then Oregon lost after the fact. The same exact scenario as Michigan and Michigan State, but on a longer timeline. Chris, I thought my head was going to explode because that's the kind of stuff, that's the kind of illogical decision-making and inconsistent decision-making that gives people freedom to doubt your system if you're the committee, and I can't defend it.
No, there's no way you can defend it, and it feels like there are some inherent biases that the committee might have, whether conscious or unconscious, and that's a problem when determining what this order is and who's actually going to have a shot at competing for the national championship, because you're absolutely right. The loss that Oregon had to Stanford is much uglier, much worse than the loss that Michigan State had to Purdue this past weekend.
It's the worst loss of anyone in the top 10, by far. At least
with Purdue, you can make the case, like, they beat a top 3 ranked Iowa team. Like, we've seen Purdue, you know, play at that level and be competitive, so it wasn't necessarily a shock to see them upset Michigan State this past week. But with Oregon, they had no business losing to Stanford, and even though they do have a quality road win against Ohio State, it feels like if the committee's going to apply this head-to-head logic and say, well, the worst loss of the two teams happens to be Michigan State, and so we're going to put them behind Michigan, then you have to apply that same logic and put Ohio State in front of Oregon. So with that inconsistency, you're absolutely right. I understand that beef, but I also get why the committee did what they did yesterday in putting Michigan ahead of Michigan State, because I feel like if you put both of those teams on a neutral ground, Michigan is the more complete team. Michigan feels like the team that I feel like stacks up a little bit better when you start talking about the eye test. So I understand what the committee was doing. But based on what they did with Ohio State and Oregon, I see why you could be so outraged in making that case.
Yeah, Chris, you're right. And that's a good point to bring up in here, because I've heard the people that say for Michigan State, it doesn't matter. If you handle your business and continue to win games, they're going to wind up in it, because that head-to-head does matter for the Big Ten standings, does mm-hmm. matter for who would represent the Big Ten East in the title game. But it's just what you described there. It's the fact that we have the same situation with more evidence. Ohio State has looked better since the Oregon loss. Oregon has that god-awful loss to Stanford. You've been given more evidence and yet failed to make the same decision. And so that, to me, Michigan State's going to be fine because they truly control their own destiny. But, Chris, I just worry about even more public confidence lost in a system that's been under fire. And in this case, I think it was needlessly done. I think if you had switched Oregon and Ohio State at 3-4, nobody would have questioned that, and it would have invited a lot less criticism. It would have been a statement about you truly going about this, saying we're going to pick the best 4 teams, and instead now it just looks like you're drawing it up in the dirt.
No question about it. And with Michigan and Michigan State, they both have dates against Ohio State, so both of them will have the opportunity, no matter where they are right now, to vault themselves into the top 4 in the college football playoffs. So that's there, and you're right. It just didn't seem like it made sense for Gary Barta and the committee to open themselves up to this level of scrutiny, knowing that there was the inconsistency with what they did with the Purdue loss from Michigan State versus what they did with the Stanford loss for Oregon. So it just makes no sense. Completely legitimate argument. But at the same time, we know that all of this stuff is going to get settled out, because those 3 teams that are in the Big Ten – that are in the top 7 in the playoff rankings, they're going to all have something to say about controlling their own destiny from here forward.
That's what they've got coming up, the college football playoff. Second round of rankings came out this week, and boy, oh boy, we got to strap in for another wild one. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans in its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program. Now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles, helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. Coming up next, we have got a 34-year streak going on in the NFL right now. Will it continue? We'll tell you here next on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and Mike, we're at the midway point in the NFL season, so that leaves the question out there. What teams that are on the outside looking in right now, the playoff picture, have a chance of climbing back into this playoff race? Like, I think that there are a few teams out there that we could probably make the case for that have a chance in the second half of this season to surprise a lot of us and get back into this wild card picture. What do you think?
Yeah, so this is always interesting. Like, the NFL has these, like, weird statistical phenomenons that happen every year. We talk about, you know, in a normal 16-game schedule season, the teams that start 0-2, the overwhelming majority of them don't go on to make the postseason. The midseason version of this is interesting. So, at this point in the season, a team that's below 500, at or below 500 at this point in the season, at least one has made the playoffs at the end of the year for the past 34 straight years. So that's pretty strong evidence that says one of the teams that we got right now that's at 500 or below has a good shot to make the playoffs. Chris, I'd say even better because we have 17 games now, because we have an expanded playoff field with seven teams in each side. So when we look at these teams, I'll read you the list of these team names. We've got six teams that are at or below 500 right now that, according to ESPN's Football Power Index, have the best chances to make the playoffs here. This is top to bottom, from best to worst chances, according to RFPI. The Minnesota Vikings, at 3-5, have a 32% chance, according to FPI. The Seahawks, right behind them, at 31%. The Colts, at 28%. The Niners at 22, followed by the Eagles and the Falcons at 18 and 14, respectively. So, Chris, of those six teams, the teams with the six best chances to make the postseason at or below 500, which one are you liking?
Oh, man. I feel like I need to lean toward the Indianapolis Colts, and you know that doesn't make me feel good because that would involve trusting Carson Wentz not to throw the ball or give the ball to the other team. But they do have one of the best offensive players in all of football in Jonathan Taylor, who leads the league in yards from scrimmage. And their defense has shown the ability to be able to take the ball away. They're second in turnovers with 20. So I think that formula will be able to lead the Indianapolis Colts to a point where they could be a wild card contender. Even though I think catching the Tennessee Titans for the division is far-fetched, I do think that this team has what it takes in terms of the supporting cast to be able to climb into that wild card race.
Yeah, Chris, that probably is going to end up being the most likely one here. I cannot trust a Kirk Cousins-led Minnesota team. There's just something inside me that inherently won't do that, even though we have seen them certainly be in the postseason and lose in heartbreaking fashion in the past. The one I want to go with, Chris, in an ideal world, would be the Seahawks. You're getting Russell Wilson back likely this weekend. We saw his weirdo video talking about being back, getting the pin out of his finger. But you look at their remaining schedule, and it's just a meat grinder here. You're going to have to play the Cardinals twice down the stretch of the season in the division. Mm-hmm. You're on the road at Green Bay this weekend. You've got on the road at Los Angeles against the Rams in mid-December as well. You're going to get that Chicago Bears defense mixed in with that in December, where, who knows, Justin Fields, if he keeps progressing like this, could be difficult. And so I just think by nature of that division and having to start things off this weekend with the Packers down this home stretch, the Seahawks have a tough stretch, even if I do like Russell Wilson coming back with that offense.
Yeah, no question about it, which leaves them as one of those teams that should be involved in the OBJ sweepstakes, just because we recognize how desperate they are, the level of urgency they need to have in making this season a success, if for no other reason, trying to convince Russell Wilson that this is the place that he needs to be long term. So I know Seattle has kind of gone away, and that the other three teams, the Chiefs, the Saints, and the Packers, have emerged as the front runners for OBJ services. But remember, we heard Seattle early on in this process, right before OBJ was released by the Cleveland Browns. So I think there could be the potential for Pete Carroll and John Schneider to be lurking in the background, and it would make a whole lot of sense because that's an offense that could punch up its firepower just a little bit in order to try to climb back into the wild card picture.
It's so interesting looking at this now, Chris, at this list. Because, again, our Football Power Index weighing these things has the Falcons down at 14% chance to make the postseason. I had to look up and realize the Falcons right now, if the season ended today, would be in the NFC playoffs as the 7 seed, which is a remarkable testament to what Matt Ryan's been able to do and what that offense has been able to do overcoming what looked like an early season disaster.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that has to do with the schedule, why FPI doesn't think the Falcons can make it in, because they're on the road against the Dallas Cowboys this weekend, and we know Dan Quinn is going to feel a way about his former quarterback coming into that building. And knowing that he's got an opportunity to make a point against that group coming off of an ugly loss against the Broncos. Then after that, they have the New England Patriots at home. They've got a date with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers down the line. They've got a date with the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo. And then finishing out the season at home against the New Orleans Saints. So, again, not an easy road for the Atlanta Falcons either. But they do have a veteran quarterback. And, you know, we'll see whether or not they're able to get Calvin Ridley back at some point in the second half to be available to him. But I just think that that's a little bit of a reach, too, when we start talking about the Falcons, even though today, if the playoffs would start, they would be in the mix.
Yeah, Chris, I think the veteran quarterback portion of this is worth noting here. It's what makes the situation difficult for Philadelphia, who I have no confidence in making the postseason based on what we've seen so far, and the 49ers, who are going to end up, I think, caught between worlds by the time we get down the stretch of the season, having to start to really get Trey Lance on the field and begin this process because the heat has started to get on Kyle Shanahan and that front office a little bit finally after all this. So I'm with you. I look at the Colts, and I think that would be my pick right now. Sitting at 4-5, again, ESPN's FPI giving them a 28% chance to move on to the postseason despite starting 500 or worse. And remember, team 500 below has made the playoffs after this point in the season 34 consecutive years. Caney and Golic Jr. is brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, if we're going to judge by rosters, we have 587 pounds of birthday on deck on this show, and we cannot wait to celebrate every last bit of it. We'll do it after this word from AT&T. This is a beef birthday around here, man. We don't half-ass birthdays here. Not one bit. We go all in on this one. Put their hand in the dirt for this birthday. AT&T, if they're friends and family members you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everyone deserves something new. So AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details. Back with another birthday boy next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Caney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, all guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and that's where we got to go right now to welcome in my birthday brother. Just found it out that me and this man share a birthday. My guy, Kendrick Perkins, ESPN NBA analyst. Big fella, what it do?
What's going on, fellas? Hey, it's Scorpio season. Kenny, happy birthday, my brother.
You already know.
Mike, what's happening?
What's up, Perk? Happy birthday, man. We appreciate you joining us on the big day, man.
I appreciate it. You know, once you get, you know, over 35, man, you just celebrate peace. That's all. Because my kids take away from my birthday because I have to celebrate theirs before mine.
That's how it is when you all the way grown out here in these streets, Perk. You know what it is. But, Perk, yeah. I gotta ask you about what's going on the NBA court, man, because the other night we had an ugly scene between the Denver Nuggets and the Miami Heat. Of course, Markieff Morris with that ugly take foul and then Nikola Jokic retaliating. What were your thoughts on the incident and then the subsequent suspension and fines?
You know what? I mean, you know, things happen. That was old school basketball. I used to get into a lot of those. And, you know, I know a lot of people are saying, you know, Jokic, you know, he hit him when his back was turned. But, hey, you can't turn your back when you start something, you know. Markieff, he instigated it. And I thought, you know, hey, look, you know, and Jokic retaliated. I didn't see, you know, it happens in the heat of the moment. And, you know, I love a little beef every now and then. You know what I mean? I love a little barbecue when we can make some hamburgers. You know what I mean? Throw some steaks on there on the barbecue pit. But I thought the fines were fair. I thought everything about it was fair, and you just move on. And, you know, you had a little tour to beef between the family and things of that nature, but it's part of it. It's part of it. Ain't nobody going to do nothing, man. We already been down this roller coaster a long time, and nobody's going to get hurt. They'll just move on.
Perkin, I got to ask you a question along those lines, because you just said it. Nobody's going to do nothing about it. And Mike and I made this point right after the incident happened. The fact that Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero, who were right there at midcourt when the incident took place, the fact that they didn't get at Jokic, if you were Markieff Morris, would you have a problem with those dudes in your locker room?
You know what? I think it just shocked them. It shocked them. And look, I will say this, Ken. You know as I know, Mike, listen, some guys, they have it in them to pop off right then. Some guys, it don't take much to pop off. And some guys, you know, they just non-controversial. But some guys is just in them. You know, I was just on teams where I had guys, it was just in them. I was one of those guys that it was just in me to pop off. If it was some action or I had to have my teammate back, it was an instant reaction. Some of those guys just don't have that in them. Does that mean they don't have his back? No, I just think it's just not in their character.
Certainly everyone different in that regard here, but you're right. Ultimately, this is going to be entertaining but fleeting, and we'll keep it moving as we go on with this NBA season. But, Perk, that one might be easy to forget about. Hard to ignore the Golden State Warriors at 9-1 right now. Steph goes off for 50-10 the other night here. Are they all the way back at this point, Perk? Have you seen enough to count on this Golden State team again?
I have, and it's all about culture. And see, it's not just Steph, you know, scoring the basketball. Steph is doing other things now. Steph is out there rebounding the ball right now at a high level, almost 7 rebounds. He's defending. He's making others around him them better. But when you see the culture, and I said this in the preseason, it was one team that went undefeated in the preseason, and that was the Golden State Warriors. And what I said was I saw guys like Jordan Poole. I saw guys like, you know, Damian Lee, Andrew Wiggins, they started to embrace the culture. That's moving without the basketball. That's shooting the three ball with confidence. That's locking in on the defensive end, knowing your assignments, helping the helper, having that trust. And then you add a Klay Thompson that's about to come back with how Draymond Green is anchoring that defense, along with that coaching staff with Steve Kerr, Ron Adams, and Mike Brown over there putting their minds together and developing those guys and putting them in position to be successful. I wouldn't be surprised if they win the championship.
Perk, earlier this week we heard some grumblings that the Celtics could potentially be interested in moving Jaylen Brown, and we know that there's one star in Philly that wants out. And it seems like Ben Simmons is moving toward a place that he's being more cooperative with the Sixers because they resume finding him and that he's meeting with their specialists. How do you think those two situations end up working themselves out?
Well, it's not going to happen. I mean, if the Celtics didn't trade Jaylen Brown for James Harden, they sure in the hell ain't trading him for Ben Simmons. Okay, let's get that out of the way right now. But when you think about the situation with Ben Simmons, now, I don't see Ben Simmons thought him sitting out that the Philadelphia 76ers were going to struggle and he was going to make a statement. Well, that plan has backfired on him, because not only are the Sixers playing well and have togetherness, but a guy by the name of Tyrese Maxey has jumped right into his spot and is playing unbelievable. So now Ben Simmons knows that, and I said it before the season started, in order for Ben Simmons to get out of Philly, he got to help Philly help him. And that's by getting on the court, showing the NBA that you have taken your game to another level. You got your confidence back so that your value could go up so that you can be traded. So he tried to get it his way, but eventually, all of a sudden, now he seems, along with his pockets getting a little lighter, that he got to put his pride aside and say, you know what, let me cooperate. Let me try to ease my way back into things, because the only way I'm going to be able to get out of here is by getting on this basketball court.
And still waiting to see how that one resolves itself, but Ben Simmons starting to at least help the organization help him a little more throughout this process here. You guys can catch Kendrick Perkins all over ESPN on NBA Today, the great new show Malika Andrews and the gang been killing it over there so far. So, Perk, happy birthday, man. Continued success on the show. You guys have been great so far, man.
I appreciate it. Thank y'all. Y'all continue to do a great job, man. Candy, happy birthday to you. Mike, my guy. Y'all continue to speak the good gospel and the truth. I appreciate y'all.
That is the great Kendrick Perkins right there joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. By the way, Chris, I was not ready for Perk to shout out Scorpio season on the way
Hello.
In here, man. My guy is dialed into the signs.
You already know, man, but that's how we get down, man. That's what the Scorpios do. We show love to one another. I'm surprised as you are that we share a birthday, but I'm glad we could have him on the show and kind of clarify some of the things going on in the NBA right now.
It is incredible. It is absolutely incredible here, but most importantly.
Hey, it's Scorpio season.
Hello.
Coming up next, I don't know if it's Scorpio season, I don't know if Mercury's in retrograde or what's going on, but Jerry Jones sounds a little bothered down in Dallas. We will try and see what the Stars have to say about the future of the Star this season for the Cowboys next on ESPN Radio.
It's all over. The Boilermakers knock off the Michigan State Spartans 40-29. And here come the fans.
That sound courtesy of Learfield IMG College, Purdue, upsetting Michigan State in the celebratory moment of the week. This celebratory moment of the week is brought to you by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate Championship Savings for the win. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, presented by Progressive Insurance. And Mike, right now we got to get to some comments that Jerry Jones made after the Denver Broncos walked the dog against his Dallas Cowboys. Coming off of a bye week with Dak Prescott back in the lineup, Jerry was not all too pleased with what he had to say about his team's performance.
No, so Jerry Jones came out and had a lot to say, quite frankly. I thought yesterday got a good laugh at the notion that he said they weren't surprised by anything they saw and that him and head coach Mike McCarthy went over plenty of what they expected before the game. That in itself was funny. The rest of what Jerry said might ring a little more for this team. He said, quote, "The thought of getting beat was not in my mind. I do believe we let the momentum get away from us, and it reflected in our body language. When you don't concentrate on just the physicalness, you can have what happened the other day happen. We thought we were ready. We weren't, and that's as flat as I've seen any team. We've got to get back. We let our home crowd not get into the game the way you'd expect a home crowd to. We basically played what seemed lackadaisical." And Chris, you know Jerry Jones. That was the team and the organization that drafted you here. This is a guy that's always going to have his hand in every part of the organizational pie here. So it's no shocker that he's getting out in front and being the one. We always think about coaches using the media to send a message to a team here. Jerry Jones reprising that role for Mike McCarthy, letting him know the effort wasn't enough.
Oh, well, no question about it. We know the face of the Dallas Cowboys is Jerry Jones. With most franchises, it's the head coach or it's the quarterback, but not the case with the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones is always going to have something to say. We know that he has local spots on the radio stations down there, and he's always going to let his opinion be known about his team's performance, especially as embarrassing as it was on Sunday. That was as flat as we've seen that Dallas Cowboys team this season. Keep in mind, this was a group that we all thought could be considered the best in the NFL, and losing to a Denver Broncos team that had, four wins going into that game, and they had beaten opponents that had a combined record of 7-23, that was embarrassing for Jerry Jones and his squad to find themselves in that spot. So they clearly have to bounce back. They got an opponent that they can do it against this week coming into their building in the Atlanta Falcons, but it's a matter of getting back to basics for the Dallas Cowboys, which is that defense being disruptive, not allowing somebody to run the ball for 200 yards against them, and then that offense being able to be balanced, being able to get that run game going, and then being able to take shots over the top downfield to those weapons that Dak has at his disposal.
Chris, how difficult is that? I mean, as soon as you got to Dallas, I'm sure you knew the book on Jerry Jones, what this team is about, his presence in the organization here. There aren't as many organizations in the NFL where you see the guy who is the acting GM in a lot of ways, in a lot of instances. I know his son Steven does most of it now, but the owner, the guy who literally signs the checks here, is this something that everyone in that building is just so used to that it doesn't necessarily like geek you out? Or is there a learning curve for having someone as involved in all this as Jerry Jones is when you're a player?
Well, I think it's a different dynamic with this team now than when I was there, because keep in mind, Bill Parcells was the head coach, and he was the czar of football operations. Jeff Ireland was the GM, but he reported to the Big Tuna. So it was a situation where Jerry Jones couldn't be overly involved in terms of buying the ingredients, cooking the meal, all of that stuff. That was left to Bill Parcells' charge. So as players, there was no question about who was making the decisions. I think that gets a little more complicated when Bill stepped out of the picture. Wade Phillips became the head coach with Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator slash head coach in waiting. That dynamic becomes a little bit tougher in terms of players understanding their specific role and how that fits into the team's success. So, yeah, I think it does complicate matters when you have an owner as vocal as Jerry Jones, but that hasn't seemed to matter in the Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott era of Dallas Cowboys football. Because you have strong leadership at the quarterback position and in that locker room, they've been able to block out a lot of the noise created by the fan base, the media, but also the owner, and pay attention to the task at hand. So I'm not necessarily sure that Jerry Jones's comments are going to derail this team. I don't think it's going to create any more urgency for this team as well, because their objective is to compete for a championship. And for the majority of this season, they look like a group that can be able to get that job done.
Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. Chris, the one interesting thing to me about this team, because I think that was going to end up being an off game for Dak Prescott and the offense. I think Tyron Smith's help at left tackle, and certainly the way that whole thing operated without him in the lineup, worth noting going forward here. But defensively, we talked so much the early portion of the season and how good we felt about that unit was largely tied to turnovers. Trevon Diggs was leading the charge on that, one of their young defensive backs. It really seems like, especially this last weekend, we saw Denver, teams are going right at him, Chris. As much as he was a boom corner and the fact that he could take the ball away at a high clip early on here, we've also seen plenty of instances of bust where he's getting beat on double moves, getting beat for deep plays. I think it's telling that teams are still throwing right at him here, that the rest of them see something very different than what the outside labeled early on, which was this dominant young corner.
Well, here's the thing. Somebody's band is going to play when you throw at Trevon Diggs. It's either going to be the Dallas Cowboys or the opposing team. And with the matchup that they had in the Denver Broncos, you have a big body receiver in Tim Patrick. That's a tough cover for anybody in the National Football League. A lot of folks don't know his name. It's not a household name. But the dude can ball, and he had four catches on five targets for 85 yards and that touchdown that we're talking about where he mossed Trevon Diggs. So it's a situation where he's going to be an aggressive corner. He's going to take some chances, and most of the time it ends up working out for Dallas's defense. But sometimes it doesn't work out, and when it doesn't work out, it's going to be a big play for the opposing offense. So that's just what comes along with a player like Trevon Diggs with his particular style. But the Dallas Cowboys defense is all the better for having him versus not having him, because he's still one of the best corners in the National Football League.
Yep, that's still going to be vital for them going forward, too, because we've talked about styles like this. We keep referencing that Chiefs team from a couple years ago, Chris, but if I'm going to build the ideal corner for a team with this kind of offense on it, that's going to be it, right? One that's going to steal you extra possessions, even if every once in a while it costs you.
No question about it. I think the much more important thing for the Cowboys is being able to create pressure on the quarterback. And even though they did sack Teddy Bridgewater four times, that pressure was far too inconsistent in terms of being able to disrupt what that Denver Broncos offense was doing. And we also know it's hard to consistently pressure the quarterback when the opposing offense can run the ball 41 times. And that was another big issue that the Cowboys defense faced. So they've got to be much more disruptive up front, especially winning first and second downs, in order to create those downs and distances where Dan Quinn can be a little more creative with his pressure package so that group can be more consistent with affecting opposing passers.
Always pressure for the Cowboys. Definitely need more of it to show up on the field for Jerry Jones and the boys down there. But coming up next, a player that I'm sure Jerry, if he had a choice, would like to try and sign. Let's figure out where Odell Beckham Jr. heads next.